cost of dates? It depends. Usually Sherry would order the most expensive thing on the menu, like filet mignon.
I remember thinking it was really weird that Brian would always order a side salad. He would get lots of complimentary bread and side salads at the Fisherman. Who does that?
I mean, who orders steak at the Fisherman every time? We've had our share of money arguments. Probably one of the bigger ones was having to do with the cost of gas.
I don't think that Brian understands that when the gas light comes on, I panic. I need to get gas immediately.
Why wait for the light to come on? Gas is cheaper at Costco, like 5 cents cheaper.
And then the next thing I know, we're arguing about 5 cents. That's a nickel. We're arguing about nickels.
Her car holds 20 gallons. That's 20 nickels every week.
Don't even get me started about the frigid temperature of our home.
We live in San Clemente. Put on a sweater.
Warm and toasty.
Financial Peace University was really good for our marriage.
Oh, I think it put us on the same page. I mean, it got me involved and then it reined in Brian.
They gave us a plan for debt, for savings, for insurance, for retirement.
And how to communicate.
It's nice to say that in our home, we now have financial peace.
And you can too!
A little bit? Yeah, it's funny because all those stories, we tried to make it bigger than life for that video, but those kinds of things happen. Like, anybody would say you're on my husband's team, where you're like, just put on a sweater, we're fine. Yeah, how about right now? It's freezing outside. It was like 64 degrees in our house, and he's like, this is great. And I'm like, no, it's not. Look at the baby, she's freezing. So those things actually happen to us. I'm excited to be here talking to you. Let's see how this works. Yeah, and I will say this, that most learning that Brian and I have done have come from mistakes. We didn't go to school to learn about finances, and we learned it the hard way. In fact, if you think about kind of where we come from, my husband had 7 student loans from Point Loma. When we got married. I had worked at Disneyland for a number of years, and honestly, guys, I have no idea where my money went. I'm pretty sure it went to Denny's after we had off our shift, and I know I was in a self-defense thing for a while. I did all this stuff, but we got married, and I had nothing to bring to the table except no debt. I walked into his place, and he had a mortgage. I didn't even know what a mortgage was. But he had 2 mortgages. He had 7 student loans. We had an adjustable rate mortgage. He was panicked all the time. You know, we took out lines of equity to do upgrades. It was crazy. And I'll tell you what, we were in a mess. And it was really fun to learn from these mistakes, said no one ever, right? And here's the thing. We got married, and we discovered that men and women are different. How many of you guys know, I have a handout on your table. You can use it, you cannot use it. I'll have some fill in the blanks. Just enjoy. But for those of you that are note takers, you're welcome to fill in those notes. But how many of you guys, when you got married, you walked down the aisle, and once you got married, the preacher said, and the two of you become one. Right, anybody? Okay, true and not true. The two of you become one. And what we learned right away is that we are very different. We're very different people. In fact, so here, a couple things that we've learned along the way. Gary Smalley says, he's a marriage counselor, he says that, you know what, men and women are different in the fact that men like to share facts. How many of you, like I learned this about Brian, if I want him to talk to me for a while, I ask him a question where he can explain something to me. Anybody else like that? Yeah, I'm just like, oh, tell me more about tire rotation. And there he goes. And he'll go on and on and on. And so I learn a little bit of something, you know, and I know, okay, I can't ask him that one again, but I have to ask something else about a car later, right? Men share facts, whereas women, we like to share feelings. You know, I am in a good place if my relationships are good, and my feelings are just like, oh, being shared, that's good for me. Where if I go too long, I see the glazed over face for him. And he's, I know he's there, but his spirit is gone. He's somewhere else if I start talking about my feelings too much. Here, men connect by doing things. They like to do things together. Our marriage counselor told us that, and I found myself then at the on-target shooting range, right? Hiking for hours in the dirt. He's like, oh, look, a snake. Ah! But I thought, okay, well, we're going to connect, but we have to connect by doing things. Where women, on the other hand, we connect by talking. And talking. And talking. Right? We actually know that men can speak about 30 to 40,000 words a day. Where women, we speak 60 to 70,000 words with gust up to 120,000. Right? If something's going on, we need to talk, and we need to talk, and we need to talk. Which is, again, you get the glazed overlook. We know that men can also be controlling. You know, this is how you do it. This is exactly what we're going to do and how we're going to do things. Guys can be controlling. Whereas women tend to be more agreeable. Not everybody. If you've ever been on a PTA, definitely not. But we can be more agreeable. And you're sitting there like, yeah, amen, that's true. Men tend to be more independent. Right? They like to go off, kind of do their own thing, and just be independent. In fact, Brian, he can spend all day in the garage. All day. I don't know what he's doing in there. Something. But he's happy. Just put me in my cave and let me just hang out by myself. Good to go. Whereas I'm like, are we having a fight? Where did you go? Are you mad at me? I'm not really sure. Like, well, all of a sudden he disappeared. And then I'm left alone because women tend to be more interdependent. This is the whole, I'm going to go to the bathroom. Does anyone else have to go? Have you ever seen guys do that? Not here. I've never seen that before because that's just, that. I think that would be weird. That would be weird. And then finally, men tend to define themselves by their ability to achieve results. To achieve results. If I can get something done, if I can see progress, okay, then the guys are doing good. Now, ladies, on the other hand, we tend to say, how are our relationships? Do you ever have that, you have a conflict with someone and you can't think about anything else? It's just that conflict and it's like in our heads going around and around and around and around and around and around, around. Okay, I don't know if guys do that, but I know I do that. And that's just a typical thing that can be different between men and women. Now, on top of that, opposites attract. Okay, opposites attract, and it's true. It's cute when you're dating. And then you get married, and then you have something happen in your house, like the frigid temperature. How many of you are burning up all the time? How many of you are freezing? Yeah, and how many of you have an opposite at home? Yeah, it's true. And you know what was fun is when I got pregnant, I finally got to feel what Brian feels because I was hot. It was December, and we're in bed, and the flannel sheets are on, and I'm like, why did I put flannel on? It's so hot in here. I can't imagine why I did this. And he was like, Sherry, it's cold. And I was like, now you understand. Now you get it, right? But opposites will attract. One of you in your family is probably a saver. One of you likely says, you know what? We ought to keep some money, set it aside, let's save it. And the other one is probably a spender. Am I right? Yeah, and so when the saver, it's an important thing. We need the saver in our life. We have to have that person so we don't have to retire and have that cookbook, 52 Ways to Prepare Alpo and Love It. But we also, there's a spender. And savers, you need a spender so you have a life. You need to get out of the house other than Triple Coupon Tuesday, right? It needs to happen. So we need each other, but we are different that way. Some of you like things clean. You like everything to be put away. And then the other person in your house is like, socks go on the floor. I know there's a hamper that's open right there, but why use it? I have all this floor space. I'm just going to throw everything everywhere. And some of you are okay with that, and others are not. And it's just true. Opposites will attract. Then on top of that, we have something that Dave likes to call, Dave Ramsey in our class, he calls it nerds and free spirits. Okay, now my husband is a nerd, and we took a little quiz, and he's a type 10 nerd, which is like as far over as you can get. Some of you are on his team, so let's see who you are. Okay, how many of you for Thanksgiving, you were like, Thanksgiving starts at this time, we have to be on time. We gotta be on time. Like, you have to. In fact, we have to be early, because if we're on time, we're actually late, right? Or you're like, I gotta get to church, and I gotta be 15 minutes early, and I just have to do that. You're on time. And then others of you are like, late. I'll get there when I get there. Okay, that's Thanksgiving. There'll be traffic, and you're making up excuses in your mind why you're gonna be late, you know? And so those people, I don't know, which one are you, nerd or free spirit? Here's some more. How many of you for Thanksgiving had a seating chart? Seating charts. You're like, oh, this is where everyone will sit. This will bring harmony to our household. Others of you are like, as long as I'm not at the kids' table, I'm good. Right? I don't really care. People figure it out. We're family. We should all get along. Nerds, recipes should be precisely followed. That would be a nerd. Right? You've got to do everything exactly right. This is the person that puts the flour in the cup and then you level it off. Right? And you're supposed to sprinkle a certain way. That's our nerd friends. Okay, free spirits, it's just a guideline. Little of this, little of that, it'll turn out fine. It'll be good. That's our free spirit friends. Okay, how about nerds? You already know what you're having for Christmas. Because you can't have what you had for Thanksgiving, so you have to have a whole new thing going on for Christmas. Like, you've got the plan, that's a nerd. Free spirits, we'll have food. It'll be fine. We're good to go. Nerds, you have a spreadsheet for what you're getting everyone for Christmas. You've thought about it. You're like, oh yeah, this is exactly what we're doing. Okay, you know. Free spirits, you're like, shopping's an adventure. I'll just go. I'll find stuff. It'll be amazing. That's more me. And then also, for our nerd friends, wrapping gifts is an exact science. Creasing the corners, only so much tape. You have to fold things the right way. If that's you, you are a nerd. It's not a bad thing, but that's you. Free spirits, throw it in a bag. Right? Or it looks cute. It has personality when it's wrapped terribly. That's me. In fact, this holiday season, this Christmas, everybody is getting It's a Girl baby bags. Because it's what we have. I'm like, yep, pink, blue, whatever. You're all getting It's a Girl. Because we have 1,000 of those in our house, and I don't care that it's Christmas. Like, happy Hanukkah, too. You get those bags, you know? Like, whatever. With all of this, we have nerds, free spirits, opposites that attract, men, women, all these things. No wonder we have money fights. No wonder. In fact, we have money fights, and this is a problem. In fact, money can lead to some serious issues if we're not on the same page. If we don't sit down and actually talk about what we're gonna do with our money, then the number one cause in North America today, the number one cause is money fights and money problems. That's heartbreaking. People that disagree about money, it's said, people that disagree about money once a week versus a couple that has a disagreement like once a month are twice as likely to end their marriage in divorce. It's incredible. How many problems stem from this? A Stanley Markman study found that the number one thing people say they argue about most in their marriage is money. That's what people talk about, and they disagree about. A Citibank study found that 57% of divorced couples say that money fights were the primary reason they didn't get along. The reason. And then according to a CNN survey, a couple with $10,000 in debt, which is not a lot of money, is twice as likely to get divorced than a couple that just has $10,000 in savings. Twice as likely. because of these very small numbers, because it's so important. But if money has the potential to be the very worst part of our marriages, it has the same potential to be the best area of our marriages. It really does. When we sit down and we get on the same page and we talk to our spouse like they're a grown-up and we act like grown-ups as well, this has an area or the potential in our marriages to be amazing. Because money really represents power, priorities, our dreams, what we want for our future, and our value system. In fact, this was called the checkbook test. The checkbook test is where we used to have checkbooks. I don't really, we write like 12 a year when we tithe. That's kind of it. But it used to be you'd look at where did I spend my money. We could probably look at this now at our credit card statement or bank statement. And you'd say, okay, if I look down at all the things I'm spending my money on, where's it going? Where's it going? And that's going to show the priorities and the values in our lives. Where your treasure is, your heart is also. When you agree on your value system, when you sit down and you agree, you can reach a unity in your marriage that you can experience no other way. You can have peace. When you are on the same page with your spouse with your money, you'll be on the same page with your spouse on so many other things as well. It sort of has this cascading effect. But it's a beautiful, beautiful thing. Now, to get there, Dave Ramsey, what he does is he puts together these baby steps. Now that I have a baby and I see her little tiny feet, and she doesn't step yet, we kind of have to guide her along, but baby steps, you do one little step and then one other little step and one little step at a time, you end up finally getting where you're going, where you want to go. And so Dave Ramsey, he talks about the value of saving money. Because if you follow these baby steps, which starts with just saving money, then you guys can win, and I can win with our money. Baby step 1 and 3, they deal with saving money. And so I wanted to talk about that just for a few minutes. There's 3 reasons, really, to save. 3 reasons. The first one is emergencies. We would recommend that you just save up money for emergencies. In fact, do this with me. I want everybody to take your hand and make a fist. Hold it right in front of your face. Take your other hand, and I want you to grab your wrist, and I want you to put your fingers so you can feel your pulse. Does everybody feel your pulse? If you have a pulse, you will have emergencies in your life. No one is exempt from this. You can let go of your pulse. Now you're like, ooh, it's there, right? We will all have emergencies in our life. In fact, I love, I can't see very well right now, but how we just heard about a slab leak. That shouldn't surprise us. Emergencies happen. They happen, and we have to be ready for emergencies in our world. And so the first thing, if you don't have any savings yet, the first thing you can do is just get $1,000. Take $1,000 that you have, you know, sell something if you don't have $1,000, and just put that away. Put it over on the side and say, you know what, this is not pizza money. This is not, ooh, I found a sale for a new couch money. This is money that I'm just going to set aside in case there is an emergency. It's a buffer between you and Murphy. You know Murphy. If something goes wrong, it can. And it'll keep going wrong. Because the problem is, if we don't save for an emergency, all of a sudden, do you ever find that you have 2 crises? One, like, you know, the transmission dies on the car, and that's an issue. That's a huge problem. You put it on the credit card because you're not ready for an emergency, and now you have a money problem, too. Now we have 2 things that cause amazing stress in our marriages. But if we have that $1,000, we can fix the transmission. And then we don't have a second emergency. It's a beautiful thing. Now women, it has been found that we have something on ourselves called a security gland. We have a security gland. And our security gland is attached to our face. And when that security gland spasms, so do we. And we tend to tell our husbands all about the things that make us feel insecure. Like, oh my goodness, we don't have any money saved and this bad thing happened. And then we just go and go and go and go and go. Guys don't have the security gland. It's weird. They're just kind of like, whatever, we're good. Okay, but we do. And so we have a place in our body where we know, man, if I don't have money saved, if I'm not ready for something to go wrong, it just makes us feel off. So you want to fix the transmission if you can. Okay, and you're going to do that by having some money set aside. When you get an emergency fund, you'll stop having emergencies. It's really weird. Like, I found that now that we have a fully funded emergency fund, we went from $1,000 and we paid off all our debt. And then after we did that, we said, okay, let's set aside 3 to 6 months' living expenses. You know, we'd cut cable. We don't need to save up for cable for 6 months, you know, but like our mortgage, our water bill, all those things. We said, let's just put 3 to 6 months of that aside so that then, you know, if something gnarly happens, we're prepared, we're ready to go. And we stopped having emergencies. It was the weirdest thing because now we sort of save up for stuff and we're more ready, but it took some time to get there. In fact, Halloween, I chased a black cat. I'm like, come here, kitty. I'm going to chase you because there's nothing wrong going to happen. Because I'm ready for it. I will say, though, we did have a pretty big emergency. Abigail was born 7 months ago. I left my job as a teacher, so we lost our second income. We have a rental property in Carlsbad, and we lost our renter. So all of a sudden, we go from two incomes to one. We have a baby, which costs money. You know, I have a friend that she said, all you need is a diaper and a boob, and you're good. And I was like, really? No, they need more stuff, you know? We have things with kids that cost money, and then we had two mortgages that we were on the hook for. But because we had an emergency fund, we were okay. We weren't happy about that, like, okay, we're trying to find a renter, but at the same time, we were okay. So the first thing you save for is emergencies. The second thing you save up for is purchases, okay? Large purchases. Now, a lot of people will typically use a credit card, right? Dave Ramsey's not a big credit card person. We still have one. But the idea is if I'm always using my credit card, okay, and I just keep using that, at the end of every month, I'm trying to undo the damage that I just did. If I just swipe something on a credit card, I'm gonna spend more money. In fact, McDonald's, this was interesting. McDonald's found that if they were the first chain to put credit card readers inside of McDonald's. And you know what they found? People spend 47% more money by using a credit card. That's a lot. Because then, you know, you go up to the menu and you're like, yeah, I'll have a number 6 supersized with the apple pie. I'll pay for hers. You know, like, sure, no problem. Swipe the card. You walk in with cash, you're like, dollar menu, you're on your own. You know, it's the truth, and so people spend more money. This was interesting. I did a study. MIT did a study, and it had to do with, like, brain scans. And what they found is that when people are using credit cards, okay, nothing happens in the brain. Like, there's no connection to real money. But when people use cash, I mean, imagine you're paying for something, like, you find a couch, and it's $4,000, and you have to put down $4,000. That hurts. And they found that our brain actually registers pain because we know that that money is going and it's gone and we're not going to get it back. We use cash now when we go out to eat. We say, okay, how much money are we going to spend this month when we dine out at the Fisherman? And so we know it's in a little envelope. And when the waiter comes at the end of the meal, and he's got that little black book thing, you know, you put the money in there. Kind of feels like a coffin. I put little Uncle Ben in there, right? And all of a sudden he goes, and he's not coming back. It's gone. And so we're very aware. We're like, okay, we're spending money right now. So what we do instead is instead of borrowing and using a credit card for purchases, we pay cash, and we use something called the sinking fund approach. Now, a sinking fund is, it's a real estate term, really. So commercial real estate, they'll buy a building, and they'll say, okay, there's a roof on the building, and that roof costs $20 million. But it's a 20-year roof. So what they'll do is they'll set aside $1 million every single year so that at the end of 20 years, now it's not this huge thing, they have the money already set aside to buy this roof. And so what we do is we do sinking funds for the major things that are coming in our worlds. So for instance, car payments. You know, it's so common. In fact, I wrote this down. The average car payment as of November of this year is $545 over 69 months. That's buying a car and paying for it for 5.5 years. That's incredible. And cars, their value goes down so fast. It's like taking $100 and throwing it out of your window every week that you're driving the car. It's true. And so what we say is, we don't want to do that. We don't have a car payment. So what we're going to do is we're going to take that money and we're just going to start putting that aside. And we'll put it aside and we'll just keep putting it aside until we have a big pile of money, and then we'll go and we'll get a deal. We'll go negotiate. We'll go figure it out. And so Brian hunted and hunted and hunted and hunted. He's really good at that. He hunted forever. He found a car finally. And he's like, Sherry, I found this. We wanted to get a 4Runner, like a used 4Runner, because it's safe, right? That was my thing. It's got to be safe. So he's like, found one. I was like, great, let's go test drive it. And he was like, yeah, it's in Arizona. And I'm like, you found a 4Runner in Arizona? He's like, yeah, it's way cheaper out there. And I was like, let's go test drive it, right? So we drive to Arizona as the sun is coming up. And what I wanted to do is be dramatic. I was like, okay, we are going to buy this car. If it's good, it's probably good. If we're going to drive that far, we're going to buy it. And I'm like, let's be dramatic. So I got one of those really cheap old like briefcases that when you like pop the sides, it's like click, click, you know, it's pretty cool. And I went to the bank and I asked them, I was like, can you give me $20,000 in hundreds? And they were like, sure. And it was like a stack like this. And I have this huge suitcase. I was like, that is ridiculous. And I gave it back. And I said, can you give it to me in tens? and they were like, are you serious? And I was like, yeah, with the tape around it and everything. Okay, that'll fill a little suitcase, little, you know, thing. So we go to this car lot, and we're sitting down. We love the car. We said, you know, we're like, okay, we're going to buy it. We negotiate a price. And then I was like, click, click. Whew, and I spun this thing around, and I was like, we're going to pay for it with cash. It was so fun, right? The guy looked at me like an eye in the middle of my forehead. He was like, cash. He's like, well, we need to run your credit report. And I was like, no, you don't. No, you don't. You don't need to, because we're going to pay for this. So we paid for it. We got the pink slip right there, and we left. But we had to save up for that experience. We had to save up for it. And so what we like to do now is we say, okay, let's do these sinking funds, okay? After we got our emergency fund ready to go, we started to say, okay, what do we spend money on? What are the things that we know, those big things that are coming, that we don't want to be a big deal, like property taxes? Okay, you have to pay for property taxes, but you don't have to do it all at once. You could save up over time, over the year, and say, okay, well, if I have $7,000 due in property taxes, what is that divided by 12? And every month you put away a little bit for that. Okay, we did that with cars. We did that for Christmas. Now, I know Christmas is in like 3 weeks, so it's hard to do now. But think about the people that you would like to give gifts to in your life. Birthdays, Christmas, all that. Give it a dollar amount and say, we're going to spend this on each person. And now you know how much money you're going to spend in gifts for the year. And so instead of just getting hit with a huge bill all of a sudden, you've saved for it over time, and now you can just pay for all your Christmas gifts, or birthday gifts, or anniversary gifts, or whatever. We car repair. Your car is going to break. Ours breaks too, right? So we put away a little bit of money every month just for when we need new tires, just for when the car is going to break. Okay, home furnishings. You know, I know at some point I'm going to want a new couch. Couches are expensive, unless you go on Craigslist and you get one for free, because they have that section. But if you want to go buy something new, you know, just put the money away. Electronics, your phone's going to break at some point. You know, all of those things. So think about, what do we spend money on? And instead of just getting hit once and then having a crisis, okay, you can put away some money over the course of the year or the months. So purchases, okay? The last thing Dave says to save money for, wealth building, okay? Building wealth. We want to save money to build wealth. Because when you have a lot of money, one, there's security in that, knowing that you're going to be taken care of, okay? But also, you can have a lot of fun. Like, you can have a lot of fun with money. Money can't buy happiness, but it can buy some fun, right? And you can bless people if you have a lot of money. Like, you could retire with dignity if you have saved for it. Dave Ramsey teaches that if you follow the baby steps, Once you get the $1,000, pay off your debt, and then you save up 3 to 6 months for your living expenses, okay, then you can start to invest in government-protected retirement funds. Okay, now here's the thing. When we build wealth, discipline is the key. Okay, there is no get-rich-overnight solution. If someone tells you, hey, just invest in this and next week you'll be millionaires, they're lying to you. Okay, they want to get your money. This is one of those things that takes a long time. It takes discipline, and no one likes discipline. In fact, the Bible says this, no discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. And we know this. Later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. A harvest of righteousness. Discipline's hard. It's a hard thing to do, okay? It's hard to go to the gym. It's so much easier to come home from the gym than go to the gym, right? Like, you just know it takes discipline. It's hard to say no to that chocolate chip cookie. But then later you feel good. Like, discipline is important because it takes us where we want to go. Because the more I have, the more I can give. God is happy with that. So, building wealth. Here's the thing to know. It's a marathon. How many of you have ever run a marathon? A couple of you, okay? Not a lot of us, right? How many of you have ever done a sprint? Okay, a few more, right? So it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. It takes time to build wealth. It really does. We are in the crock pot business. Crock pot. It's not an Instapot, okay? It's a crock pot business. There's no shortcuts. Honestly, and if building money, like building wealth, sounds too good to be true, it probably is. We live in an ADD culture, right? We want it, and we want it now. Right now, don't tell me I need to wait for something. That doesn't feel good. But because it's a marathon, the time that you start investing matters. So I wanted to talk a little bit about something called compound interest, okay? Compound interest. Now, compound interest goes like this. Let me go back. If you start investing early, so you can start investing when you have money to invest. Where do you get this money from? From not having a car payment. From planning ahead. You save your money, you pay for things that you can afford. Okay, then you've got this extra money that you can throw at, you know, a mutual fund. So when you do that, it kind of works like this. If I put $1,000 in a mutual fund that year, okay, it's gonna gain interest. Say it's a 10% interest rate. So I've got $1,000 that I put in, it gains $100, and then the next year I put in $1,000 more, and now it gains interest on the $2,000 plus the interest, and it gets bigger, right? And the next year I add another $1,000, and I'm gaining interest now on the interest, and everything that I've put in. And so it's like a snowball. It just keeps collecting more snow every year that you put that money in. And so here's a chart just to demonstrate. Okay. Ben and Arthur. Now, I'm showing you this just to make the math make sense. So here we have an example of two brothers, okay? Ben and Arthur. So Ben, he's like a pretty sharp kid, and he says, you know what? I need to start investing for retirement early. So he's 19 years old, and he just puts $2,000 in the bank, or in a mutual fund that's gaining about 12%. So he puts that money in, and he does that until he's 26. And then he stops. He doesn't ever put in any more money, but he got his money in early. Now his brother, Arthur, he says at 26, oh my goodness, my brother has been investing, maybe that's something that I should do. So he starts later, and he now starts putting $2,000 in every year until he retires at 64. Okay, so one brother puts in a little bit, the other brother puts in a whole lot. And when we get to the end, when they do retire, look what happens. Ben, who put money in earlier, ends up with $2,288,000 because of compound interest. Now, Arthur, on the other hand, he started putting in money in later. He ends up putting in way more than his brother did, and he ends up with $1,500,000. Whoa. Like, if we can understand that concept, that just made you a millionaire. If you can start and you start now. And you're like, well, that's great if you're 19. Some of you are. You're like, but, you know, honestly, like, I'm a little older than that. Hey, start now. If you haven't started yet, start now. Because this is true. This is a mathematical explosion. In fact, that's what Einstein called it. He said compound interest is a mathematical explosion. But you have to start now. You have to start now. 401ks, great options. Okay, a lot of, there's just a lot of options out there for saving for retirement. And it's important because we're all going to retire at some point. Okay, our husbands are going to retire at some point. When I was a teacher in the school district, some people were just focused on their pension. And I was like, that's it? Just your pension? That pays out like $19,000 a year. That's not very much money to live on. You got to do something else. And so saving to build wealth is key. And we have to start now. Now, there's a lot of companies out there that know this. And honestly, they are buying for your money. Like, especially now, it's the holidays, right? Everything is on sale. There's Cyber Monday, there was Black Friday, and now there's like all these crazy sales trying to get you to spend your money. And these guys are going out of business unless they can trick us or get us to believe that we need to spend our money there. They are very, very, very good at studying us and our behavior. All those store loyalty cards that are out there, why are they there? So they can track our spending. So they can figure out what works, how they can get us to spend more money. And they've done such a great job, they have us lining up to buy their products. Ooh, the new iPhone's out. It's like oh, these people are like, can't wait to spend $1,000 on this phone that's gonna depreciate in its value and I'll have to buy the new one next year, right? I'm not mad at Apple, it's a great company, fantastic, but they're very good at marketing. Think of all the marketing that you see. Like all the ways that are like, they make it easy for us to spend our money. If they make it easy for us to spend our money, we'll buy more. In fact, these companies have studied us and now we don't feel money. I mean, I said use cash and some of you are like, I don't do that ever. Okay, that's probably, you know, that's our culture now. Why is it our culture now? Because if you don't feel money, you will spend more of it. You will and I will, we just do. And so now we can walk into an Apple store with our computer, and we just swipe and walk out, right? You don't feel it, you don't even see it. We have, you know, Venmo or Vimo or whatever, you know, we just send each other money. We're like, oh yeah, I'll get this salad. It's a $20 salad. So good, I'll just send you the money. Like, we don't know anymore how much we're spending on these products. Amazon one click, oh my goodness, right? You just click on it, and it'll be in your house in 5 minutes. You know, it's crazy. And so companies compete. So what do we have to do? We have to build an ability to gain power over our purchase. So how do we do this? Okay, we develop a resistance to marketing so that we can have that power over the purchase. Did you know that we live in the most advertised to people in the history of ever? We will see more advertisements and hear more advertisements than anyone that has ever come before us. It's everywhere. And you see it in your kids, don't you? Like, what are the things that they ask for? And why do they ask for it? Because they saw advertisements. They're getting sucked in just like we do, right? And we can see it in them, but we don't see it in ourselves. So here's the thing. We can't outspend our stupidity sometimes. Dave says that. I'm like, well, I'm not stupid. We're not. But we can't like out-earn our choices. You know, we have to make choices ahead of time. And so if you have a significant purchase, now you can decide what a significant purchase is. Some people would say significant purchase is like $300 or more. Brian and I are like, okay, it's like $100 or more. It's like the thing that if I bought without him knowing, he'd be like, what did you do that for? You know, like what is that number between you and your spouse? If your husband went out and bought something and came home and you're like, whoa, how are we going to pay for that? It's probably a significant purchase. And so there's some barriers that can kind of, we can use and put us between that purchase and our money. And so here they are. There's six. First, wait overnight. Wait overnight. Okay, if you see something that you really want, wait 24 hours. Just do that. Give yourself some time to chill out. To, you know, if you're like, it's on sale, they only have one left. What is it, a Picasso? One left. They got six shrink wrapped in the back, right? They just sprinkle them out so that we get this buying fever and we think, oh, there's only one. I need it. Act fast. All of those things. No, wait. And if you come back in 24 hours and you still want it and it's gone, maybe God is telling you something, right? Maybe you didn't need that. It's funny. So you wait overnight for your major purchases. Carefully consider your buying motives. Carefully consider your buying motives. Why do you want that thing? Here's the deal. Last time that we met, we had a great speaker. Jill, what was her name? Okay, she... Yeah, Kirsten, one of your best friends in the world, right? Yeah, she was great. She's like, there's so many speakers, Sherry, who are you talking about? Yeah, no, I mean, she was fantastic, and she was like, hey, for the holidays, check your motives. Be intentional. Yeah. No amount of stuff, you guys know this, equals contentment. No amount of stuff. How many of you look around your house, and you're like, how do we get all this stuff? Yeah, right? Craigslist is your friend. You're moving. Oh. Oh. Right. If you're moving and you have all those boxes and boxes and boxes and you're like, where did all this stuff come from? It's the truth. We have all this stuff. Where did it come from? And so we say, oh, I need that. Okay. Mm-mm. Is it a need or is it a want? We have to be honest with ourselves. And can I help you out a little bit? It's probably a want. If you have food, shelter, basic transportation, and you have something to wear, your needs are being met. And if it's a want, that's fine. No problem. There's nothing wrong with getting some new stuff. That's fine. But just know that it's probably something that you want. And if you're like, well, I need it because I want a bigger, you want it. You don't necessarily need it. You know, just to get a better one is just wanting a better one. And there's nothing wrong with getting a better car, you guys. There's nothing wrong, but just know why you're doing it. And so consider your motives, because no amount of stuff is going to equal contentment or fulfillment. We got to quit chasing happiness, right? It's a bully in a schoolyard. It's that guy that like draws a line and you cross over and he steps back a little bit. We can't chase happiness. I mean, for me, I have to really check myself, because it's like, for 12 years, we wanted a baby. Like, well, not all of it, but when we got the baby fever, we're like, we really want a baby, you know? We want a kid, like, we want that. And now we have her, and then it's like, oh, as soon as she'll sleep through the night, that'll be so good. Some of you are in third trimester, you're like, as soon as she's out, it's good, right? And then it's sleeping through the night. And then once it's sleeping through the night, what's the next thing? She can communicate. And then, yeah, once she starts school and I have some free time, that'll be so great. And then it's like, oh, but she wants to get on the softball team. And so as soon as she gets on the softball team, I'll be happy. And then it's, you know, oh, as soon as she's not a teenager anymore, good God, help her not be a teenager anymore, right? Then she'll love me again. And then after that, then it's college. And then it's, I wish she would call more. Right? We got to quit chasing happiness, because it's not there. If you're living so those kids are potty trained, you know, you're looking for it in the wrong place. So consider your buying motives and recognize that stuff does not equal contentment or fulfillment. It's got to be found somewhere else. Also, another great rule, never buy anything you don't understand. How many of you have ever been to a timeshare meeting? Yeah, I went to one of those, my head hurt. They were like, so this many points equals this many stars, and this many stars equals these colorful rainbows, and then you can use the colorful rainbows on this property or the points for the... I was like, what? Brian checked out way before that. He was like, just smile and nod, and then let's get back to Hawaii, right? Like, it's funny, but don't buy anything that you don't understand. Some of us are like, man, I need this better sound system. Well, your TV has it if you just knew how to use it. Next thing you know, we have 16 remote controls in a basket, and we don't know what any of them do. It's true. You know, we have these timeshares, and we lose out on all this stuff. We end up with mortgages and insurances that we don't need, we don't know anything about. And so don't buy anything until you understand it. Also, consider the opportunity cost of your money. Okay, the opportunity cost. Now, what that means is that for every dollar or every chunk of money that we have, if we use it somewhere, it costs us the opportunity to use it somewhere else. For instance, if I wanted to take Abigail, my daughter's nursery, and make it a really cool Pinterest nursery, okay, I'm gonna spend a couple $1,000s doing that. So with that couple $1,000s, if I make this rad nursery, I cannot put those couple $1,000s in her college fund. I lost the opportunity. Now, there's nothing wrong with having a great nursery for $2,000, and there's nothing wrong with putting money in the college fund, but I can't use the same money for both of those things. And so we have to consider, okay, if I spend money and I eat out every month and I spend $200 eating out, what am I not using that money for? Well, I can't afford to, you know, build wealth over time. Well, if you cut out Starbucks, how much are you paying, you know, get a coffee machine? If you do that, then all of a sudden you free up a bunch of money that you can invest maybe, and so when you retire, you'll retire with dignity. So the opportunity cost is something to consider. And then the last thing is always seek the counsel of your spouse. God put you together because you need each other. Okay, we sometimes we have a spouse that says, I am the one that will take care of all the money because you are clueless, you know, and then we put them on an allowance. And we're like, oh, my husband, he's like a four-year-old. I give him money, he just goes out and spends it. Okay, that's got to stop. Your husband needs to be involved. If your husband is the one that takes care of all the finances and knows all the decisions, okay, and then we're clueless, that's a scary place to be. How am I going to pay for anything? What if something happens to you? Beyond that, how can I be involved in your plan if I don't know what your plan is? Right? Husbands don't want to raise a princess. And we don't want to raise a little boy. We want to work together. And so God put you together so that you can make decisions together. Who should do the budget in your household? Both of you. Who should make money decisions in your household? Both of you. Both of you. You guys need to work together. I need to work with my spouse. When I was not working with my spouse and I was clueless, all I did was like mess up his plan. And he'd follow me around with a pooper scooper, trying to figure out like, why won't you behave? You know? And I was like, what am I trying to behave to do? I don't even know. Why do I have to give you my receipts? Why do you want my receipt? Ooh, I bought name brand ketchup. You know? Seriously, and he was like, get the generic ketchup, you know, or even better, he's like, get the packets. You know, it was like, yeah, I was like, who did I marry? You are insane. But then I realized he's a nerd, and I'm a free spirit, and we can unite, we can work together, and so now I don't have to get packets, you know, but I understand why he acts and says the things he does. God tells us, he says in Proverbs 31:10, he says, who can find a virtuous wife? For her worth is far above rubies. The heart of her husband safely trusts her, so he will have no lack of gain. Right? We want our husbands to trust us. And I think that he would be okay if we took a little bit of liberty and we said for husbands, you know, who can find a virtuous husband? His worth is far above rubies. We safely trust him. We'll have no lack of gain. You guys have each other for a reason. So talk to your spouse. It's your built-in, it's just important. Okay, now from there, if you have a reluctant spouse, or you just wanna bridge this conversation, you're like, how do I even start this? Okay, well, Dave Ramsey said sell your car is not a good way to start that conversation. It's just not. You cannot go hunting anymore, honey. You know, that's not gonna work. So instead, what you should do is talk to your husband about your dreams for the future. This is a fun conversation. Honey, if we had $12 million, what would we do? What would you do? Where would we go? Who could we bless? If we had money, what could we do? What would be fun about that? If we didn't have a mortgage anymore, if we didn't have debt that we were trying to erase every single month, what would we do? How would we feel? Where would we go? What would that be like? That dream conversation is powerful. It is fun and it is powerful, but you know what? It's just a dream until you figure out how you're gonna get there. Once you decide how you're going to get there, then it becomes a goal. And that's where the budget comes in. You say, this is what we want to do. Well, how are we going to do that? Okay, well, budget's such a scary word in our culture. Like, oh, it's a budget. Okay, you decide where your money goes. It doesn't, like, harness you by anything. You decide ahead of time. You're like, I'm going to spend this money in these places. And then you follow that. And when you do that, you're not cleaning up your mess. You're just being intentional. Instead of wondering where your money went, you tell it where it goes. Have the dream conversation about your future and then turn those into goals on how you can get there. And then commit to working together. Commit to working together to achieve your financial goals. When you guys work together with your spouse, amazing things can happen. Amazing things. And here, God gave us this illustration, and I want to share it with you because it's so cool. I don't know, anybody here ride horses? A few of you, okay. I don't think this is a riding horse, but this is called a Belgian horse. Look at the size of that animal. Like a Clydesdale, that's a plow horse. It is so big and so powerful. Did you know a Belgian horse by itself can be buckled into a harness and it can pull 8,000 pounds? I mean, that is a big animal. It's a big animal. And so you'd think, okay, let's put two Belgian horses together that have never met, and you buckle them in side by side. You'd think if one can pull 8,000 pounds, two together could pull 16,000 pounds. Two that have never met, can pull 21,000 pounds. That's amazing. Now you take those same horses, and you train them together so that they're pulling equally yoked at the same time. Two that have trained together can pull 32,000 pounds. It's insane. If you work together with your spouse, if you talk about where you want to be and decide how you're going to get there and rein back that discipline and say, okay, this is how we're going to do it, God shows up and amazing things can happen. It's incredible. Brian and I, it took a lot of time to get there. We don't have money fights anymore. We talk about things. We plan before each month. Where are we going to spend our money? Okay, what's coming up? How are we going to invest? What are we going to do? It took some time to get there, but now we're there and we have financial peace. Now, some of you are sitting there and you're like, honestly, I don't know where my money goes. I don't know. Okay, I don't know where it goes. Okay, what I did is on your packet, I gave you guys a quick start budget. Okay, and this is just for you to reflect. It's something you can look at for November and just say, hey, where did our money go in November? How much money do we spend on gas? How much money do we spend on food? How much money do we spend eating out? How much money do you spend with your buddies at lunchtime? Right? Just start looking and saying, you know, what does it cost to live in Orange County? What does it cost? And so you fill that out. Just go through it. This is just for you. It's an eye-opener. And if you do this, you might have some surprises. Gas is typically a surprise. Food is typically another surprise. And decide, are we happy with these numbers? And do we want to make any changes? You also may consider attending a Financial Peace University class. My husband and I, we host one here at the church every year. We don't get a nickel for doing it. We just like to share. Because I know how bad I felt. Like, I felt very small in our marriage before we got on the same page. And he was crazy. I thought he was a crazy person. I was like, what happened to the guy that took me out on dates? You know? And so it got us on the same page. And then we could communicate. And that's so important. Some of you guys are like, yep, I know all this. It's a good refresher. Right? The holidays are coming. Make good decisions. Right? Myself included. So it's something to consider. If you guys have any questions or if you're in a rough place and you guys just need some counseling, okay, my husband and I do this as well, okay? We don't charge for it. We'll just sit down with you, look at the numbers, and help you out. So my email address is up here. I'll leave it there through your discussion. I'd be happy to reach out and talk with you. Brian's really good at that too because he's very nerdy. That way, but it's something that we love to do. So that's it for me. Thanks for letting me share with you, and